afternoon, and welcome to the Nuance Mid-Cap Value Semi-Annual Update Call. My name is Cheryl, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star, then the number one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager. Sir, you may begin.
Thanks, Cheryl, and good afternoon, everyone. As Cheryl mentioned, this is Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance Investments. I want to thank everyone for joining us today for our Nuance Mid-Cap Value Semi-Annual Update Call. In the email invitation to today's call, there was a link to a presentation that we will be referring to during the call. For any reason, if you do not have that presentation, you can email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com, and we'll email it right over. Before we begin the discussion today, I do want to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market, financial, or governmental uncertainties. During the call today, we'll be giving an update on the firm and team. We'll also go through a summary of the investment process and give an update on performance. We will conclude our prepared remarks with a review of 2017 and a discussion on our 2018 outlook. We will then open up the call for questions. With that, I'll turn the call over to Scott Moore, our President and Chief Investment Officer. Scott?
Thanks, Paul, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. As Paul mentioned, my name is Scott Moore, and I'm President and Chief Investment Officer of Nuance Investments. On page 2 of your presentation book, you can see our agenda for the day. First, we'll provide an update on the firm and, of course, on our team. We will then go through a review of 2017 and, of course, provide you with a going-forward outlook for 2018 and beyond. On page 3 is a short summary of our firm from our seed capital in 2008 of about $30 million. We've grown today to manage a little more than $2 billion using our classic value investment approach of identifying leading business franchises, studying them over a long period of time, and purchasing them only for our clients when their risk rewards are better than that of the broad market set of opportunities. We have 3 products at the firm. Obviously, our Nuance Mid-Cap Value Strategy, which we're talking about today, which has grown from about $200 million a few years ago to about $900 million today. Our Concentrated Value Strategy that is in the early stages of closing to new clients that's running close to $1.1 billion. And our more new Nuance Concentrated Long-Short Strategy, which is closing in on $100 million today and is a couple of years old. Each of our products are capacity constrained to position Nuance and its clients for what we think is the most important thing, future returns, as we believe staying relatively small in asset size is a competitive advantage versus our peers over time. On page 4, you can see our investment team with in the range of 70 cumulative years of experience. Importantly, this has been a very stable and experienced group who largely grew up on the Nuance investment process and approach, and has seen cycles starting from, if you think about the Nifty 50 era of the mid to late 90s, the tech boom in the very late 90s, the subsequent tech bust, the commodity and finance boom and bust of the mid-2000s, and, of course, this recent 8-year slow but sure economic expansionary period. The process and the team have actually been through a myriad of one-off events, different elections, different political parties being in charge, different theories on taxation, of course, which is a hot topic today, and, of course, just the vagrancies of capital spending cycles and the natural flow of companies and their competitive positions over the very long term. Our goal, of course, is to keep this group stable and cohesive for many years to come so our clients can continue to gain confidence and trust in our expertise and depth of knowledge. I would note that we've added depth to our staff in the last year or so in the form of 2 associate-level investment analysts, Jack Muir and Ben Becker, and we're certainly happy to have those guys here and assisting our team. On page 5, you can see a single-page schematic of our time-tested process. This process has not changed since the inception of Nuance, and you can be assured it will not change in any sort of meaningful way going forward. Consistency of process is so critical to consistent execution and long-term performance for our firm. The bigger picture summary of the process is that Nuance is a bottoms-up, one stock at a time, classic value investment firm searching for leading business franchises that we define as having number one or number two market share positions and very, very importantly, sustainable market share positions over the next 5, 10, 15 years. With those companies, after we've determined they have those positions, we perform in-depth financial analysis that results in a mid-cycle or normal set of financial statements for each company that we follow. With this mid-cycle or normal set of financial statements, which includes proprietary estimates of earnings, EBITDA, cash flow, all balance sheet items, et cetera, we then perform an extensive valuation study. That study emphasizes fair values and trough values, and a conclusion is met for each of the companies so that we can identify what we think of as a true mid-cycle fair value and a true recession-like trough value estimate for each company. The end goal of the process is to have a group of nearly 250 leading businesses with sustainable competitive positions, and with that list in hand, we can then monitor the best risk rewards across the investing landscape and optimize your firm or your family's risk rewards on a daily basis. So I get the question a lot, why is our process different? There's 1,000 value managers out there. What makes it unique? We believe there's three things, some of which are subtle, some of which are not so subtle. First, we believe we are more diligent than most in our competitive work, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Secondly, we believe our mid-cycle or more normal estimate process is more logical and generally gives us better denominators for calculating fair values and trough values relative to most of our peers. And then lastly, our equal emphasis on fair value and trough values for each of these companies based on historical market indicators and risk levels at the company, which you can measure based on debt, gives us, we think, a clearer vision of both risk and reward than most of our peers. Overall, we believe that combination of items has led to better than average returns with less than average risk versus our peers and benchmarks since our inception, and we certainly enjoy operating within the context of this process each and every day. So with that backdrop, how was our performance in 2017, and how has our performance been over the long term? Turning to page six first, 2017 was really an outstanding year for us, as we were up 15.42% net of fees versus our primary benchmark, the Russell Midcap Value Index up 13.31, and the S&P Mid-Value Benchmark, for those of you who like the S&P version, up 12.3%. This marks the eighth time in our 10 years, assuming you include our stub year of 2008 as one of the years, that we have outperformed our primary benchmark during a calendar year. If you don't include the stub, 7 out of 9 years, and we're proud of the consistency of our outperformance on a year-to-year basis so far through the life of the product. As for the long term, which, of course, as any of you have read our quarterly commentary, know that that is what we focus on and think is the most important indicator of future performance as well. Also on page six, as we approach the 10th anniversary at Nuance, we are clearly pleased with our 16.79% net of fee APR versus the Russell Midcap Value performance of 15.21, and the S&P 500, a secondary benchmark of ours, of 14.18%. Lastly, on performance, page seven shows our performance versus our peers over time. You can see we are 6th percentile versus the Morningstar Midcap Value Peer Group and 6th percentile versus the Lipper Midcap Value Peer Group over the long term. Importantly to us, if you will look at the middle data column on page seven, which is our standard deviation of returns, we are among the least risky products in our peer group as measured by standard deviation, which has been our internal benchmark for riskiness versus our peers since we began the product back in 2008. Putting those numbers together into a Sharpe ratio or risk-adjusted return ratio, our firm's primary performance bogey since we began shows we are first percentile versus all peer groups since our inception of 2008, and clearly we're pleased with the first 9-plus years of this product's history. So on page 8, what drove our performance versus the Russell Midcap Value Index in 2017? First and foremost, the biggest attributing win for us was the healthcare sector. In late 2016, early 2017, uncertainty surrounding the Affordable Care Act and its going forward future resulted in sharp underperformance in several of our leading business franchises in that sector. A couple of examples included Globus Medical, a smaller, dominant market share gaining spinal orthopedics equipment company. The company has net cash on the balance sheet. They had a small one-off misstep because of a Salesforce disruption, and the Affordable Care Act uncertainty caused the stock to perform very poorly. We were able to purchase the stock with a low 20 sort of number, and today the stock is north of 40. And we've subsequently let go most of those shares. Cerner Corporation is another example, leading healthcare IT company. Same sort of phenomenon, except, of course, it was primarily the Affordable Care Act, which people thought would stop IT-related spending within healthcare, and a couple of other names. Becton Dickinson did very, very well for us. As people misunderstood, we think the combination of Becton Dickinson and C.R. Bard through their acquisition, and Waters Corporation, one of our longtime holdings, also performed very well for us. All became excellent risk rewards back in late 2016, early 2017. We took a significant overweight position, and that paid off for us handsomely. Secondly, the consumer staples sector was also a strong performer for us this year. Multinational players became particularly attractive in 2015 and 16 as currency volatility resulted in some under-earnings and some attractive valuations. Leading franchises like Pernod Ricard, the number two spirits maker, a company like Brown-Forman, and others did very, very well for us as some of the currency issues abated and some of the internal growth issues that both of those companies had related to emerging markets growth abated at the margin. Some of that's still in the come for us, in our opinion. Lastly, our emphasis on the trucking and transportation industry in the form of holdings in Heartland Express and Hub Group also helped the product. All three of these outperforming industries or sectors were emphasized as opportunities a year ago on this call, so clearly we were pretty pleased with the outperforming year. Negatives focused on two primary areas. The first to note was our underweight in the technology space. I would note to our clients that we have long been positive on the technology sector in general, and it has been one of our largest positives from an attribution perspective since our inception. That said, today we are seeing a rather classic peak returns on capital and peak valuation period, which results in most of the stocks in that space being significantly overvalued today. The downside risk is substantial, and that leads us to a significant underweight in the technology sector today. We expect to be significant investors in the space over time, but not at these valuation levels and not at the returns on capital that the companies are earning today. Seems like a classic peak. Finally, we had some underperformance due to our 9% average weight in cash over this past year, as that obviously did not do well versus the market. We're clearly pleased we were able to outperform with that cash position being higher than that of most of our peers. We consider cash to be a risk-reward investment just like our stocks. With the average stock today in our potential universe, we call it our Nuance Master List, showing minus 25% to fair value, minus 60% to trough or recession sort of values, a simple cash 1 to 2% upside with 0% downside doesn't look half bad, and we hope our clients can exercise a little patience with us, give us a little bit of a benefit of the doubt while we wait on the next disruption or a market correction before we put that money to work. One last note on performance was some pretty solid success in merger-related stocks this year. It's something we wrote about late last year, the middle of this year. We saw a couple of opportunities to get involved in some stocks going through mergers. A couple in particular were stock-cash combination deals. I mentioned Becton Dickinson and C.R. Bard was a very good example. Another was Praxair and Lindy. Both of those ended up being very, very successful investments for us this year, and we believe show that the level of detail of work that we can perform on a couple of companies that fit what we do, that we've been following for a very long time, can lead to some interesting risk rewards and some good performance for us over time. Our final topic today is the 2018 outlook, and you can turn to page 9 to see our team's notes. First, just like in our July call, this will not be a glowing outlook. At year-end 2016, we were finding enough pockets of opportunity to continue a positive overall tone towards the opportunity set for our clients. Today, that is simply not valid nor an appropriate tone to take. From a bigger picture valuation perspective, our list, our Nuance Master List of approximately 250 leading businesses as a group, as I indicated earlier, is overvalued by about 25%, and the downside risk during what would be a recessionary environment could be as much as 60%. So those are clearly risk-reward numbers that are not very attractive, and I'm just going to restate it just to be clear. Our list of companies we've been studying for a very long time, these are mature businesses. These are businesses that we have seen through multiple cycles, both very good and very bad, as a group, is 25% overvalued to our fair values, and the downside could be as much as 60%. The good news is that our portfolio is a much, much better risk-reward with around 0 to 5% upside and only about 35%-ish downside to a recessionary period. And we think that is obviously a spread that we find very attractive. For historical perspective, these are the worst risk-rewards that we have seen for our group of companies since we've been executing this process. I would also note that these numbers take into effect an awfully close approximation of the accretive nature of the tax law changes. We've been doing a lot of work on that the last 3 to 6 months and included the accretive nature of that on a company-by-company basis. So we don't think there is a lot more in the valuation just because of tax-related ramifications. We feel like we have those effects accounted for. One more big picture data point, our list of approved stocks, our Nuance Master List, has historically ranged in valuation from, you know, as a big group, 9 to 10 times our normal earnings on a PE ratio basis, up to the very low 20s on a PE ratio basis over the long term. Today, we're at 24 times our mid-cycle earnings for our entire group. We believe that's a pretty historically significant number, and frankly, a two standard deviation type of data point. The bottom line is the opportunity set here is very narrow from our perspective, and the upside potential is quite limited. Again, to emphasize, on a positive note, we are quite excited about the spread between our portfolio risk rewards and the market opportunity risk reward, but want to make sure our clients are clear related to the upside potential that exists based on our work. One last note. As we are now about 10 years into this product's life, and I am personally running at 25-plus years of working in this classic value investment world and studying competitive positions, mid-cycle earnings, returns on capital, hurdle rates, et cetera, for a long time, we believe there is a clear acceleration of companies going through competitive transitions over the last year or two. These transitions raise the level of uncertainty surrounding multiple sub-industry in today's market. In the last year, we have written about oil in particular. We've written about middlemen like distribution companies across multiple sectors facing significant competitive transitions going forward. That's a group in particular that we have liked for a very long time and that we are now setting on the sidelines because of the potential disruption as middlemen face serious technological transition over the next 5, 10, and 15 years. We are really excited about this acceleration in competitive transitions as it plays into our strengths as students of these transitions. Historically identified competitive transitions here at Nuance include the telecommunications sector back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the newspaper industry back in the early 2000s, the ATM money exchange sub-industry, kind of in the 2008, 9, 10 era, the retail industries in general for the last 10 years, 15 years, the paper industry, the coal industry, and many others. Avoiding these industries and the potential value traps that typically result is a key part of our own processes, competitive advantage versus our peers and benchmarks. Benchmarks in particular cannot avoid these transitions, which is a key reason, in our view, why we've outperformed them since our inception and why we feel very good about the next decade or two of potential outperformance with less risk. So with that, what are the specific opportunities that are better than the market alternatives today? In other words, what are we buying for you? First is insurance. Our most recent opportunity showed up in the latter stages of 2017 as an above-average level of catastrophes, think hurricanes and fires in 2017, has resulted in significant earnings erosion. The way we think about it is under-earnings across much of the insurance sector, and stock underperformance has led to new opportunities. Today, we're able to buy shares in a company like the Travelers Company, the leading U.S. small commercial P&C underwriter at about 12 times our mid-cycle earnings. Very classically, we also like Everest Re. Company represents an attractive opportunity today as the leading North American reinsurer is trading at about 10 times our internally derived normal earnings. In both these cases, we think these are undervalued companies. And when you start thinking about these high-quality leading franchises at 10 to 12 times mid-cycle earnings with a market opportunity set of 24 times, you start to get an idea of the risk reward. So those have been growing weights for us. Unrelated to the catastrophe losses, but still within the sector, is MetLife. It's a little on the larger cap side for our mid-cap value product, but we've got a position in it nonetheless. This newly refined and focused life insurance leader, post the spinoff of its annuity business, is currently trading at about 11 times our normalized earnings with a 3% dividend yield. The stock is actually down significantly today. But basically, it's still right around the levels that we purchased the security in the first place, just giving back a little near-term performance on a kind of a muddy quarter, if you will. But we still certainly like the name at these valuations. All three of these companies, the commonalities are they have strong market share positions, leading and comfortable balance sheets that are all under-earning their long-term potential. Their PE multiples clearly compare favorably to the entire universe, which is at about 24 times our estimate of normalized earnings. And as a result, we are overweight the insurance industry as a whole. Our second opportunity is not exactly the most exciting thing to talk about, but it is cash. Relative to our group of 250 leaders that are overvalued by 25% with the recessionary downside of 60%, the plus one or two versus the zero does look attractive. We want to be clear with our clients. We are not suggesting that a market downturn is imminent, but we do suggest that the market is not considering risk items such as a potential recession following 8 years of an economic expansion, debt levels at the corporate or industrial level that are extremely high versus history. By the way, that's non-finance debt levels. And government debt levels that I think we all know on the call are certainly stretched versus anything we've seen in the history. Historically, whether it's government or corporate-related debt levels, the increased levels of debt typically pull forward demand, as such accelerating growth. And when there is no more debt to use, or debt becomes something you can't use because you've stretched already, the going forward demand growth typically wanes. It feels like we're probably closer to that than we are far away from that. So that's part of what I believe the market and our team believes that the market is not appreciating. So as a result, our opportunities are pretty limited, and during those periods, we typically diversify your portfolio and raise cash that can be put to work at better valuations. As such, your portfolio's number of holdings has grown from 56 at year-end to about 68 names over the course of the year, and cash is really at its roughly peak level of around 9%. That's about as high as we can take it. One last nugget of historical perspective, just to give this group just some data that I see that is interesting. Since our mid-cap values inception in November of 2008, we are up 16.79% annualized and net of fees versus our Russell Mid-Cap Value Index up 15.21 and the S&P 500 up 14.18. These are very large numbers versus historical equity returns. And if you look at the cumulative gains over that period, you'll see our product up 315% since our inception in 2008. The Russell Midcap Value Index up 265, the S&P up about 240. Those are big, big numbers and don't compare favorably to long-term equity returns over time. Couple that with the Nuance Master List mid-cycle PE ratio expanding from 9 to 10 times our mid-cycle earnings to historically high levels of 24 times during that period, and we hope our clients can understand why we currently believe patience is valid and appropriate, and cash looks like a reasonable opportunity today on a risk-reward basis. On nothing more than an anecdotal, today is the first day, and frankly, I can't even remember when the market is down 1%, your mid-cap value product is down about 49 basis points. So that's one of the values, just that protection, as people might begin to realize that these valuations might not be sustainable over time. So we'll see. The last opportunity I'd mention is related to the consumer staples sector. We continue to believe that several risk rewards within the consumer staples sector are attractive. These companies have outperformed the market in the early to middle stages of the current economic expansion as investors went through what we term a chasing of yield stage, but they've really lagged over the last couple of years as rates have stabilized down in kind of the very high ones to very low twos until just recently. These companies have historically been stable market share players with excellent returns on capital, very good balance sheets, and those traits persist today. I would highlight just one example. In the interest of time, Kimberly-Clark, a dominant market share franchise with number one market share or number two market share positions across the sea of their consumer products. The company is under-earning today due to its under-leveraged balance sheet. That's our opinion. At 1.6 times debt to EBITDA versus peers at two to three times debt to EBITDA, we think there is a very modest amount of leverage that the company could take on that could enhance today's earnings and move them from around our non-leveraged normal of around $6.50 to closer to $7 at a stock of $120 today, down from $140 to $150, we think the 17 to 18 times our mid-cycle PE is a very attractive spot to be in today's market, which we think is a bit stretched. Very importantly, also with Kimberly-Clark, historical trough multiples applied to our normal would lead to downside of the stock, which is only about 40%. Obviously very attractive versus the market set of opportunities, which could go down as much as 60%. So stable business, stable earnings profile, under-levered is a real trait that we're seeing that has better risk rewards than the market as a whole. In conclusion, overvaluation across the board is the largest risk clearly, except for some pretty small pockets of opportunity. It is pretty pervasive, and much like the late 1998, 1999, early 2000 period, the 2007 and 2008 periods of the market, the world seems to have once again largely forgotten about how much downside risk stocks can actually have, and I can't emphasize that enough to this group. Your team, your product is very aware of that, and we think we're positioned very well to capture any sort of sideways or even modest correction if that were to happen, and certainly position well if something more draconian occurred, which we're certainly not calling for. Again, on a positive note, we are quite excited about the spread of our portfolio risk rewards versus the market opportunities that we identify and have been tracking for a very long time, so that makes us very comfortable today. As such, patience is a key word for us. Patience to either allow earnings and EBITDA to grow into their current valuations, or the patience to allow a correction to happen. I think that's the paramount item today in today's market. Thank you all for listening, for your continued confidence and support. And with that, I'll stop my prepared remarks and open it up to any questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then the number one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up your handset first before pressing any numbers. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your touch-tone phone. Standing by for questions. And our first question comes from Steve Wine from Stifel Nicolaus. Please state your question.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. How would you define your mid-cap market value? And secondarily, if a stock grows beyond that valuation, do you immediately trim it back or do you sell?
Yeah, hi, Steve. Thank you for your question. So we define mid-cap broadly as the smallest member of the Russell Mid-Index, and the largest member of the Russell Mid Index, and we identify those members monthly, and we do a 12-month average of those, so we get rid of kind of like when benchmarks change very rapidly at June 30th and at 12/31, we get kind of a smooth effect. So basically what we're trying to do is to beat a mid-cap index. So our definition is the smallest and largest members of that benchmark. To allow us some flexibility, we have a stated rule that we'll have 80% of our portfolio within that smallest and largest members of that benchmark. Today, those numbers are about 800 million market cap, all the way up to, I believe it's about 49 billion of market cap. So it's a pretty big range.
Yeah.
So we allow 80% of our portfolio to be within that range. We have 20% flexibility outside of that range, so that if something were to go through, let's call it that 48, 49 billion market cap range, you know, we can slowly and methodically ease our way out of it as it approaches our fair value. Or if we find an opportunity that, let's say, is below the $800, $900 million threshold that we really like, we think maybe it's worth on a market cap basis 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, 1.5, we don't have to use some arbitrary line that doesn't allow us to do what is in the best interest of you, which is to help you make money.
Thank you very much.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your touch-tone phone. And our next question comes from Abby Shoup from Marcus Wealth. Please state your question.
Hi. I was just curious about the portfolio positioning. If you if market valuations keep increasing this year, do you expect that the number of portfolio positions to stay the same and just the position sizes grow, or do you expect the size or the number of positions to shrink?
Yeah. Hi, Abby. Kind of a little bit akin to what I was talking about in my presentation. As we get to late cycle valuation periods and the opportunity set shrinks, which is clearly, I think from my comments, you know that's what we believe. In general, what happens is, so that we don't end up having concentrated, and again, these are generalities. There are cases where there's one-off stock opportunities always, which is what we do every day. But in general, the more the market opportunities are overvalued and narrow, the more likely it is we will grow our number of names. If you were to look at the history of the number of names of Nuance Midcap Value, you would see that generally we've been around 50 to 58 names, so a pretty concentrated midcap value product until really the last 12 to 18 months, and today we're sitting at the year end at about 68 names. If we were to see another, let's call it 10% move, and let's say it happened to be one of our opportunities, like, for example, the insurance space where we're overweight, you would likely see us bring down the weight of that insurance space on strength as they approach our fair value or surpass our fair value. And then what we would do, if there were no other clear opportunities, we would spread that risk out by diversifying. So if you get another market expansion, if you will, you'd see a little more spreading out of the names. Our peak number of names is 90, and we're at about 68.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your touch tone phone. And speakers, at this time, I show no further audio questions.
Thanks, Cheryl. I just want to thank everybody again for joining us today for our update call. And just a reminder, for more information about Nuance and to stay up to date on all of our strategies, please visit our website. Thanks again.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.